Chapter 13. Mortuary. Callie started running, with Jake just behind her. While administrative offices made up most of Upper Chandra Boulevard, funeral-based businesses dominated the lower half, a florist with elaborate lunar gravity arrangements in the window, a somber suit store, another with muted dresses, a few small prayer rooms, each displaying different symbols and icons by their doors. A few people still milled just outside the shops and the chapel and the mosque, speaking in nervous whispers. As Callie and the others ran past, one shopkeeper slid shutters down over the windows. A door slid shut with a heavy thump of magnetic locks. Chandra stretched out 60 meters past the plaza. At the end of the boulevard sat a heavy door framed by two half-rotted ferns that had probably been very healthy just a little while ago. A small wooden sign stood straight out a little above eye level, all but invisible until they were right next to it. Below the word mortuary, in fine print, stretched a list of regular business hours and half a dozen names. A painted sign, not electronic or holographic, a warm, humanizing touch for anyone who had to visit this section of the city. No sound came from behind the door. Callie looked back at Jake. Tessa and Wagid had followed as well.
"Are we sure anyone's in there?"
asked Callie. Tessa stared at the door.
"When you say anyone, are you talking about the staff or about them?" "Either, I guess."
"There's always someone in there," said Jake. "However you mean it. At least 2 or 3 dozen clients at any time, all part of the big machine."
He slid the baton from his pocket and extended it with a flick of his wrist. Wagid flinched at the sound.
"Do you always carry illegal weapons?" asked Tessa.
"Usually, yeah, kind of a security blanket thing." Jake shifted his grip, then reached for the door controls with his free hand. "Why, did you want one?"
"I'll take one,"
Callie said.
"Just being a wise ass, it's all I've got on me."
"On you?" echoed Wagid.
"Got a pistol back in Anubis."
"I always thought you were just joking about that."
"Nope."
Tessa's eyes opened wide.
"How did you get a pistol on the moon?"
Jake shrugged.
"Friend back on Earth shipped it up in pieces. Took 2.5 years. Ammo came up one round at a time, but I ended up with..."
"If they're in Anubis, they might as well be back on Earth."
Callie pulled the wrench from her pocket and flexed her fingers around it.
"Fair point." Jake dipped his head at the big tool. "Gonna be okay with that?"
"I'm fine," she said. "Really."
"Might change your mind in a minute."
"In a minute, I'm pretty sure I'll still want to be back on Anubis with all the hatches hard locked." "I like that idea,"
said Tessa. Jake let out a humorless chuckle.
"Don't think it's an option anymore. Just try to stay calm. Panic in a fight, that's when you get hurt. And these things don't stop at hurt."
He reached for the door controls, paused, and looked back.
"Anything else, boss?"
Wagid shook his head. The door slid open with a faint whish of air moving toward lower pressure. It gave them a full view of the mortuary reception area. A desk, some benches, a few religious icons on the walls, and, like all rooms on the moon, a collection of plants. Dead plants. A petite mortician in black stood by the desk with her back to them. Her bright green hair knocked a memory loose in Callie's mind. The pink-skinned woman who'd ridden up on the carrier with her, who'd been using crutches on Earth. The woman turned to look at them, her head tilted in a quizzical way. She stared at them, waiting for them to say something. They stared back. Jake leaned through the doorframe, shot a quick glance both ways, and stepped into the mortuary.
"Ma'am," he said. "Everything okay in here? Any problems?"
She said nothing. Her head stayed cocked at an angle, her ear close to her shoulder. She took a hesitant step toward Jake. Callie and Wagid followed behind him. Tessa stayed in the doorway. The sounds of movement came from the doorway leading into the back. A bearded man in a dark suit stepped out. He paused and rocked back, understandably confused by a group of caretakers brandishing weapons.
Wagid took a step forward.
Did you hear the announcement? We're checking to see if...
Callie set her free hand on Wagid's arm.
Wait.
The bearded man wore one sock on his foot. No shoes. The sock bunched up around his foot as if he'd never finished pulling it on. As if someone hadn't finished pulling it on him. Callie looked up at the woman who was still cocking her head at Jake. Bruises ringed the woman's neck, almost hidden by the edge of her collar, as if she'd been choked or maybe twisted.
Has she blinked?
No, said Wagid, taking a step back. She hasn't. More uneven steps came from the back room. The mortician took two lunging steps forward, her head bouncing on her broken neck, and grabbed at Jake. His baton caught her across the forearms with a sound like wood breaking. He brought it back and hit her in the side of the skull. The mortician staggered from the impact, then lunged forward again. The bearded man staggered at Callie and Wagid. She brought her wrench down on his outstretched hand and felt the bone crumple beneath the blow. She brought it down again and smashed it against the dead man's shoulder. Wagid grabbed at the man's other arm, and the bearded zombie turned to focus on him. Jake put his boot in the mortician's stomach. In the lunar gravity, it sent her sailing back into one of the benches. She tumbled to the floor and climbed right back to her feet. Movement caught Callie's eye. A silver-haired man, then a woman, lurched out of the doorway behind the desk. The man wore a black coat that matched the mortician's, a baggy, embroidered robe draped over the woman's body. Behind them stalked a white man with a bloody nose and what looked like the end of a computer stylus sticking out from one ear. Callie left Wagid with the bearded zombie and stepped forward, raising her wrench. She brought it down on the first zombie's skull as hard as she could. The impact rattled the wrench and numbed her fingers for a heartbeat. The wrench slipped from her grip and bounced on the thin carpet. The zombie didn't pause, taking three more steps, forcing her to retreat from its grasping hands. Fresh blood leaked out through the silver hair. The gash in its scalp revealed a steel plate beneath the flesh. Callie planted her foot and threw the other leg up in a high kick. Her toes caught the dead man right under the chin, snapping his head back and lifting him off the floor. He tipped into the bloody-nosed man, and they both collapsed to the ground in a heap. The dead woman in the robe found Jake. He smashed her elbows, but the arms kept swinging. Another baton strike sprayed the dead woman's teeth into the air. Jake brought his hand back, spun the baton, and slammed the butt of the steel rod into the zombie's forehead three times. The skin tore, the bone caved in, but the woman barely slowed down. Another figure lumbered from the back room, a big, bare-chested white man with a glossy Y of autopsy glue drawn across his torso. He headed for Jake. A naked woman in her 70s or 80s followed.
No!
Yelled Tessa from the doorway.
Help him!
Callie turned. The bearded zombie had Wagid pinned on the floor, one knee holding down the caretaker's arm. Even on the moon, the dead man had mass and leverage. Wagid's free hand threw punch after flailing punch. The dead man had one of his pale hands pressed over Wagid's mouth. The other one squeezed his nose shut. The zombie with the silver hair lurched back up to his feet. So did the bloody-nosed man. They both moved toward Callie. On the edge of her vision, Jake swung the robed woman into the green-haired mortician. Callie took three leaping strides and threw herself against the bearded zombie. It rolled its big shoulders and shrugged her off. She fumbled, slid, and tumbled over the pair. Beneath the dead man, Wagid's punches had become unfocused, thrashing. His heels kicked at the floor, the desperate actions of a drowning man fighting to get one last breath. Callie stumbled to her feet, overcompensated, and crashed against the wall. She twisted around, kicked off, launched herself back at the bearded zombie. This time she plowed straight into it. It felt like hitting a wall, but she knocked it off Wagid. The dead man tumbled, bounced twice off the floor, and thudded against the front desk. He shifted twice, thrice, and then flipped over to push himself back to his feet. She knelt to check on her boss. His head had been wrenched to the side, and his jaw hung low, not quite lining up with his skull. Blood ran between his lips and through his whiskers.
Oh, no,
she said. She stared at Wagid's dull eyes.
No, no, no.
She dimly registered Jake smashing his baton into the silver-haired zombie's neck. He stepped toward the bloody-nosed one and swung his arm again. It fell back.
Come on,
Tessa yelled from behind them.
Get out of there!
Callie glanced back. Tessa stood with one foot out in the hall and two fingers firmly planted on one of the interior door controls. She gave Callie a desperate, beckoning wave. Three more dead people stumbled from the back room. A burial shroud hobbled the first one, binding its legs and slowing the ones behind it. One of them was a young woman, close to Callie's age. The green-haired woman got back on her feet. Wagid grabbed Callie's wrist. A half-dozen thoughts flashed through her mind. Death throes, autonomic reactions, adrenaline spikes. Medical miracles where people survived traumatic injuries. People who recovered from... Wagid's free hand reached up. It settled on her neck. His fingers squeezed against her throat. Callie twisted her hand free, grabbed at his wrist, and levered the choking hand away. He pawed at her thigh, sat up, and went for her throat again. She pushed herself to her feet.
Get out here now, Tessa yelled, or I'll lock you both in there.
Callie took two big steps back and hit the wall next to the door. Wagid's corpse rolled over onto its hands and knees, crawling after her. It shifted targets as Jake bounded past it. Tessa waved them both into the hall. They squeezed past, Callie looking over Jake's shoulder as they did. Eight or nine zombies in the mortuary front room now. Half of them looked like they'd barely been dead for an hour. Jake turned back. Wagid! Callie set a hand on his arm.
No.
Jake looked at her, at the crawling figure, and took a step back. Tessa shifted her weight, took her fingers off the button, and pulled herself back into the hall as the door closed with a hiss.
All locked up.
Unless they hit the door panel, said Jake.
Tessa shook her head.
That wouldn't matter.
Why not?
She raised an eyebrow as if trying to figure out if he was joking with her.
All the systems on the moon run on capacitive touchscreens. They're standard tech for discorp structures and vehicles.
Callie half remembered the term from a class she'd drifted through.
Which means...
Tessa sighed.
All the screens up here react to the electrical charge in your skin or the static pads on some of the spacesuit gauntlets. If a body isn't alive, it doesn't have an electrical charge. The screens won't even register it touching them.
Something thumped on the other side of the door.
Just tossing this out there, said Jake. But in my experience, bodies that aren't alive also don't walk around killing people.
Tessa's brows furrowed beneath the razor line of her bangs.
What's that mean?
Means we shouldn't assume normal rules apply with these things.
Some rules have to apply,
said Tessa.
No skin charge means no screen response. This is right out of Forensic Pathology 101.
That was 6 years ago for me.
You never took a refresher course?
Gordon appeared in the hall. Close behind him followed another man with a holster on his belt and a star and crescent badge pinned to his jumpsuit.
What's going on?
Dozen or more sealed inside the mortuary, said Jake, jerking a thumb at the door. More in the docking avenues.
Wagid's dead,
Callie added.
And all of the mortuary staff, I think.
Gordon glanced at her.
You sure about Wagid?
She nodded.
I think one of them smothered him, and then it broke his neck,
Tessa said,
just before Callie knocked it off him.
Gordon muttered something under his breath.
We think that's all of them?
Callie looked at Tessa.
Maybe.
We probably want to have a couple teams walking the streets to be sure, said the deputy. Callie recognized his voice. Roshan?
Get some volunteers from the locals and we'll check all the floor plans, make sure we didn't forget anything stupid. I can help, said Tessa. I've studied all the Luna City blueprints and systems.
I think we've got it,
Gordon said. Jake gave the sheriff a dry look.
Gonna turn down help right now?
Callie stared at the mortuary door. Something hit the other side of it.
So, we're locked in.
We're always locked in here, Gordon said with a snort. Life on the moon.
She heard something else strike the door.
Maybe not for much longer.
Better way to think of it, said Jake,
is they're locked out. Callie tugged a few sweat-stuck curls of hair loose from her face and smoothed them back.
So, she said, teams walking the streets?
Jake's brow furrowed. Hey, what happened to your wrist? She let her hand drop.
Nothing. It just got scratched.
By one of them?
It's not a big deal. I think it happened back in the plaza.
He took her hand, turned her wrist. Four ragged scratches dug into her skin. Three pink, one streaked with blood. As he studied it, another pinprick of blood swelled into a bead. Come on, he said. Hospital.